Chapter 4 Tyndall wasn't particularly hopeful, but he was willing to give the scheme a try. He was desperate, feeling as if he had betrayed all of the people in his life who had invested in him. This idea wasn't his style, but he didn't have a better idea. There was no harm in it, he supposed. It wasn't the sort of thing that would alert the thief, say, if he had warded the stone somehow. They timed the spell for late evening on the premise that less movement, and a still campus, would make tracking the results easier. Tyndall arrived first, as he had the key, and he brought his mage blade, a war wand, and a water bottle. Then he stood in the dark for 10 minutes while he tried to cast a mage light. The result was so mockingly impotent that he banished it, preferring the darkness to the mockery. "I don't know why you did that," Astasia said, as the globe of pale illumination faded. "I've only been able to do that spell once, in the lab. One candle power for 3 whole minutes.
It gets easier with practice, Tyndall said, but it takes too much power and concentration without Irionite. I'm just used to doing it.
Instead, he found a taper from a cluster in a sconce and used a cantrip to make it light. He could do that much, at least. I suppose I could still have a career as a marketplace performer. Cantrips are still relatively easy.
Let's not be pessimistic, shall we?
Astasia said in an overly casual voice.
I know this has been hard for you, but you have a lot of really good people helping you find it. You'll have it by dawn, I promise.
Before Tyndall could protest that she had no real assurance of that, she swept them into an unexpected, but not unwelcome, kiss. He had known that the pretty alchemist liked him, and was certainly flirting with him, but this was the first tangible sign that she had feelings beyond professional respect and admiration. As her softer-than-dew lips pressed against him, her tongue playfully jeweled with his. The effect was erotic and mind-stopping. For a few moments, he forgot about all of his other troubles and just enjoyed kissing the sweet-smelling girl. When they finally reluctantly broke the kiss, Tyndall had found himself possessed of a new optimism about his situation. Astasia's kiss gave him the validation he needed that he was on the right track, like a sign from Ishii. He also understood that it was a feeling born more of desperation than reason, but that very desperation allowed him to ignore that fact.
"Why did you do that?"
he asked, curious. "Not that I'm objecting. It just seems a little out of character." She smiled in the candlelight.
"What? Taking advantage of a powerless, incredibly handsome hero whom I've lured into a dark, deserted library? Considering the folks back home, who believe I'm destined to become an evil sorceress, that's completely in character. No, I meant, why kiss me when it's clear you're set on a career in magic, not a husband? I mean, you remind me of Lady Pentandra, and despite her discipline, sex magic?"
Astasia asked wickedly, delighting in the scandal of the controversial field of study.
Yeah. She'll screw a maiden goat, if that's what her studies demand, but she doesn't go around cultivating romances.
He finished, lamely.
Maybe a girl just likes you, Sir Tyndall,
Astasia said softly, with humour.
Maybe she's just taken by your charm, or lack thereof, your wit, your bravery, your muscles,
she said, reaching out and feeling his bicep.
Dear Ishii's dewy. Well, she said, dropping her hand and regaining her composure. Can't a girl just like a boy and want to be intimate with him?
Sure, Tyndall said, not entirely displeased by her commentary. I'm fond of the practice. You have to understand, though, why I'm cautious. My master has enemies, and apparently you do as well, she pointed out.
I don't know much about your master, but I imagine he also has allies.
He thought of Lady Pentandra, Lady Alia, Sire Kay, Baron Arathaniel, and all of the other good folk Master Min had surrounded himself with.
Well, yes, he admitted. And now, so do you,
she concluded. It's a wizard's prerogative to cultivate allies. That's essentially what I'm doing with you and Rondal. Good, dependable, powerful, well-placed allies.
So you aren't trying to just get me drunk and drag me to a priestess? He asked, only half joking. Ishii's twat! She swore unexpectedly. Get over yourself. You might be Sir Tyndall, the Great Night Mage, but I do have a career to think about. You might be cute, but you aren't cute enough to convince me to give up magic.
My wife would never have to give up magic, Tyndall said absently. But I'm not looking for a wife, he added desperately.
Nor do I aspire to being one, she said coolly.
But it's good to know your feelings on the matter. For once, Rondal arrived in a timely enough manner to cut short the conversation's uncomfortable direction. If he suspected the two had been kissing, he showed no signs.
It's way too dark in here, he said, as he took his bag off his shoulder and casually cast a bright mage light.
Tyndall suppressed a surge of envy, as well as a twinge of regret. He liked being in the dark with Astasia.
Let's get this started, Tyndall agreed in a businesslike manner. I don't want to wait one second longer than necessary.
I'll spellbind the door so we won't be disturbed, Rondal offered. You get ready. They took positions on the floor after Rondal warded the door. Tyndall sat down and tried to make himself as comfortable as possible. He was pretty good with action-based spells, like combat magic or spellmongering. These more contemplative workings were the stuff of academics and scholars, not war magi. He glanced at Astasia and vowed to cultivate such disciplines more in the future. The process of forming an apis was incredibly difficult without the crutch of his witchstone, Tyndall realized, but once it had manifested, he connected it with Rondal's matching spell, and suddenly he had a surge of power at his disposal like he had not felt in days. Not nearly as much as if he had had his own Irionite, but more than enough to do the job at hand. But Rondal had been right to be concerned about the intimacy of the working, Tyndall realized, as they settled into the first big spell they'd done together. After making the connection with the other two magi, he suddenly knew and felt things about Astasia he never would have known. Just how much she liked him, for one. The strength and intensity of the feeling was potent. She, too, suddenly recognized some things about him, things that made him uncomfortable. And his fellow apprentice, too, had some residual feelings that bridged the connection along with the power. The longing, the loneliness, the envy, the disappointment, the self-deprecation, the whole long, sad litany of things that made Rondal who he was inflicted itself on Tyndall with an understated sadness. Tyndall felt sorry for him and was irritated by it at the same time. Then he realized just what feelings he might be projecting, and he resolved to focus his mind and emotions more tightly. He felt the emotions of the other two pull away as they made their own adjustments. They said very little while they worked. Rondal provided the power until Astasia was able to cast her portion of the spell. The moment she nodded her head, Tyndall turned his attention to scrying. The results came in much more slowly than if he'd had his witchstone, but even so, their combined efforts yielded a number of blank spots in their scrying, more than Astasia had figured upon. But luckily there were but a few within the area they had decided would be the only possible places the thief could have stashed the stone.
Time to let the thief remember what he did,
Astasia said.
Casting the recall spell? No.
Without a means of knowing whether or not the spell had worked, they let the working fall and discussed the results over the map. Soon they had narrowed the field significantly, and were excited by the spell's success, excited enough that they didn't feel the need to speak about the unaccustomed intimacy. They had gotten plenty of data, enough so that they were able to make some astute guesses about just which, exactly, of the blank spaces might be hiding the stone. They narrowed it down to a list of the most likely, and decided what order they would explore their options. They trudged up the stairs to the North Tower, where their first target field lay. It lay outside of their room.
Let's go get it, Tyndall said at once,
as he looked out the window that had allowed the thief to come in.
No,
Rondal insisted. He's got to have it warded, spellbound even. With shadow magic, we could spend days searching for it and never see it.
We have to get the thief to lead us to precisely where it is, and then get him to dispel the cloaking and protection spells.
Which I'm certain he'll do out of a sense of contrition, Tyndall said dismissively.
No, you'll threaten to stab him if he doesn't, Rondal pointed out.
That is my plan, agreed Tyndall.
Well, don't, argued Rondal. At least, not yet. You have a better suggestion?
Tyndall asked skeptically. Stabbing sounded terribly effective.
I do.
We need to flush him and his confederate out. We've narrowed the list of prospective thieves, we've reconstructed the crime, and we have some good guesses about who it is, and who their confederate is.
We do?
Tyndall asked. Don't we? Rondal responded.
He named a few suspects who fitted the facts. Tyndall considered each one, and then added another. Astasia chimed in with two more possibilities, and then they argued until they had discarded some of their suspects. She left soon after they had concocted a plan that might flush the thief out, the boys thanking her profusely for her help. "So, do we really think we can flush this guy out?" Tyndall grumbled. "Can't we use your witch stone as bait?"
"Hells no," Rundell said, appalled. "No, we're using your stone as bait, and our story to motivate him. Just keep calm and let the magic work," he encouraged.
"We spread the rumour that Master Min is coming here for a surprise visit. Let it be known offhand that it amounts to an inspection, and the only people who will be troubled are the guilty ones." He sighed expressively.
"You know, that was amazing."
"What was?" Tyndall asked, still staring out of the window.
"That spell, the way we were connected. It was like watching her breathe from the inside."
He chuckled despite himself. It was an apt description of the experience.
"So if you've got that much," reasoned Tyndall, "then you also realize..."
"Yes."
"She doesn't like me," groaned the boy. "At least not like she likes you."
"Yes.
Point conceded. You are her heart's temptation. I'm not. That doesn't make me hate you less. Fault not the victorious for their achievements, but instead fault the rules of the contest," quoted Tyndall. "I cannot help how she feels."
"No, but you don't have to feel that way back," Rundell accused.
"As if I had any say over Ishii's whim," he snorted. "Look, I do like her. She's pretty, she's smart, she's funny, even. But I don't like her nearly as much as she likes me, and part of why she likes me is I don't let her know I like her that much. That's one of the laws of love."
Rundell made a face.
"You can't study love like you study physics."
Tyndall shrugged.
"Why can't you? Just because love is Ishii's domain does not mean it's forbidden to study as you would any other subject. It's dishonest," blurted Rundell. "You should let it happen naturally and not try to force it." "And how is that strategy succeeding for you?"
Tyndall shot back. The question hung in the air, defying Rundell to defend his position.
"It's just wrong," Rundell said sullenly at last. "Love just happens. There are no rules. Why are those who know the least about love those most insistent they know all about it?" "There are two rules," Tyndall assured him. "You can deny it, but you might as well deny gravity. It will be as effective. Men and women," he stated matter-of-factly, "mate. And they do so according to easily observed rules of behaviour. A wise man does so consciously, if not conscientiously, according to Sire Rose."
"Sire Rose," sneered Rundell.
"He's a self-absorbed, cynical boob."
"You've read him," Tyndall countered evenly, "and he has a lot of excellent and pragmatic advice on love. And no, he does not advise fawning all over a woman. Quite the contrary. He counsels strength and silence."
"And they just walk into your arms when you do that," Rundell said skeptically.
"Well, you keep doing what you think best," Tyndall said with a sigh, "and I'll follow Sire Rose's advice, and we'll see who fares better," proposed Tyndall.
"My romantic life is not here to amuse you."
"Your romantic life isn't amusing anyone," Tyndall pointed out.
"Take my advice, or keep doing this idiot waiting for attention act you've perfected. Either way is fine by me. But eventually you're going to get tired of being lonely and realize that being nice and friendly to girls makes you seem harmless."
"I am harmless," Rundell declared.
"And that's why you fail," Tyndall snapped.
"Quit being so harmless. Girls don't desire harmless men. They want dangerous men who have decided to lay aside their danger on their behalf."
That's a testable hypothesis," Tyndall finished. "I'm not saying that to be hurtful, Ron. I'm telling you this because the longer you spend playing the rabbit when you should be playing the hound, the more you will resent it when you do realize this."
"I think you're just trying to get me in trouble," dismissed his fellow apprentice. Then something suddenly dawned on him from his expression.
"But that actually gives me an idea. I think I know who the thief is, and his confederate."
"You do?"
Tyndall asked, almost speechless.
"I think so," Rundell agreed smugly, and explained his reasoning. "That
That actually makes a lot of sense, Tyndall agreed. How do we...
We get them to move it, answered the other boy with a nod. Then you wait here to nab the thief while I contend with his friend.
You think you're up to that? Asked Tyndall, surprised.
I'm a night mage, reminded Rondal. And right now I'm the most powerful one on campus, he added boldly.
Tyndall rolled his eyes and handed him the wand he had been toying with.
Take this anyway, he advised. If your great and powerful sorceries cannot bring him to bear, poke him in the eye or something.
They started the next morning at breakfast, after reporting to the headmaster, where they all quietly spread the whispered rumour that Mage Lord Minolin, the spellmonger, was due to make a surprise visit and inspection. They left the details of his arrival and its purpose open to speculation, but the word spread like milk across a table. Both boys were alert for any signs that their prospective thieves would give themselves away, but there were no confessions forthcoming. But the rumour did have the required effect. They let it brew all day, until the entire campus was abuzz.
There's no way he'll let that stone just sit there and be discovered, Rondal promised, when they met up after lunch.
Let's just stick to the plan,
Tyndall said worriedly.
I still think it's a long shot.
After dinner, Tyndall collected Ancient Galdon, the captain of the guard, to sit with him at the darkened window and await the thief, while Rondal shadowed his partner elsewhere. Estasia had insisted on waiting with Tyndall, and in truth he did not mind her company. She smelled much better than Ancient Galdon. Now, if everything they'd figured was correct... Their patience was rewarded when a dark figure crossed the rooftops, swathed in black and shadow. With a single glance toward their window, the thief went to a chimney leading from the bowels of the school below, and triggered the wards Rondal had set there. The spell wasn't highly focused or dangerous. That might have been noticed with mage sight, merely something to foil a quick getaway and indicate where the trespasser had touched. With a growl, Tyndall sprang out onto the roof through the window, slasher in hand, the ancient right behind him as they moved cautiously but quickly across the slate tiles. As they came nearer, the thief overcame the effects of the spell and whirled to meet them. His hood had been thrown back, confirming their suspicions.
Caffin,
Tyndall said, sighing sadly.
I thought it was you.
Really? How? What gave me away?
He asked in a friendly voice.
The test,
Tyndall decided. You utterly failed that test.
You're a good student, I checked, but you were supposed to be studying all night. That was your alibi.
But other people testified that they saw me studying, he protested.
Exactly. You had studied.
You're even a quick study, if you're familiar with the material. But you weren't. Even though you read it, because you were under the influence of a memory agent. You read the material, but you didn't recall it any more than you recalled poisoning me, paralyzing me, or stealing my stone. Not until the restoration spell we cast last night.
Caffin smirked. Then why didn't you come after me?
Because I wanted to be sure, Tyndall said, walking carefully toward the boy. The ancient drew his sword behind him.
It made sense, but I wanted you to reveal yourself.
I restored your memory.
Actually, I restored his memory,
reminded Estasia.
Remember?
It was my idea,
Tyndall defended. When you remembered you committed the crime, you also remembered where you had stashed the stone. You didn't need to retrieve it until you left the school at the end of term, so you didn't need to remember where you left it until then, when your partner would remind you when it was safe to do so. By that time, either it would have been discovered or we would have given up the search. We could have questioned you 100 times, but if you didn't remember stealing it, you couldn't confess it. Without remembering you did it, you couldn't remember where you put it.
But then we made you remember,
Estasia said. We let it be known that the stone's hiding place was in danger.
You might be able to hide it from us, but the spellmonger? You couldn't take that chance, so you had to check and make sure that it hadn't actually been found and move it. Once you remembered, you stole it.
So I made you come to me,
Tyndall picked up, or at least back to where you hid my stone. Once you had your memory back and heard that my master was coming to Inarion, you had to act.
And how did you know where that was?
He asked conversationally.
I saturated the entire campus with a low-level magical field, explained Estasia.
The same time we did the memory restoration spell. It was visible by scrying.
every place it being absorbed or countered. Once we knew where the cloaking spells were, and there were a lot more than we anticipated, narrowing it down to the most likely spots, the ones near to the path between the tower and where we found the cloak, wasn't difficult. We knew you couldn't have had it on you, and you wouldn't have stashed it in your room, so you put it up here, on the way of your escape. You met your accomplice, but didn't hand off the stone. He gave you the drug instead and stashed your cloak and gloves. You just had enough time to get back to your room, slip in without notice, and return to studying without anyone suspecting you got out. Shadow magic, Tyndall said.
Very good, Sir Tyndall,
laughed the other boy, drawing his own blade. Not a mage blade, but a long, slender scimitar. You had almost all of it. Except your accomplice, Caffin, Tyndall said carefully. Rondal is heading toward him now.
I don't believe you,
Caffin said with a sneer, testing the air with his blade. And the name is not Caffin of Gaia. Oh, it is my name, Innarasi. In Farisian, though, my name is Relan Pratt, Lord Relan Pratt of the House of Pratt, my mother's side, he explained with a self-satisfied grin.
Pratt?
Estasia asked, confused. Like Aurel Pratt, agreed Tyndall grimly, the mad mage of Faris.
Do not call him that,
screamed Caffin, suddenly angry.
My uncle was a great man.
Your uncle?
My mother is his younger sister, Dorelia, he explained proudly. The House of Pratt has been producing great magi since before Perwin sank. She married my father in Castor, but she never lost her allegiance to Faris. When I was a child, when the war started, I was hidden in the north, in Gaia, under my father's name. The Sea Knights of Gaia have ever looked south for their brides, and their loyalties are notoriously tenuous, he added with a chuckle. That's what comes when pirates serve the land-born.
You are no pirate, spat Tyndall. You're right, he agreed, nor a Sea Knight. But I was my mother's pupil long before my full talent emerged. She knew it was going to come. I've been learning shadow magic for as long as I could read, all in preparation for the day when I could act to avenge my uncle.
By stealing my stone? Tyndall asked incredulously. I never even fought in that war. I was a kid. This isn't our revenge, idiot,
Caffin scoffed, leaping from one side of the roof to the other and landing as nimbly as a cat. The stone is just the first step. It needn't have been you who donated to our cause, but my captain needed a stone, any stone, and yours was at hand. He straightened, facing them while effortlessly balancing on a ridge. I'd originally planned on stealing Rondal's, but you gave me the best opportunity. Yours was just too easy to take. Besides, he snorted, I hated having to lose to you on the field that badly on purpose, but if I'd fought you the way I wanted, you would have started asking questions. That also gave me the opportunity to slip the Bard Dane into your water after the bout.
That was you.
Your attention was so fixed on the lovely lady, he said, laughing nastily as he walked across the beam, his sword steadily in hand, that you never looked to see which of your fawning admirers was giving you a drink. A couple of hours later you were easy enough to find in your room. He stopped at the end of the beam and slashed the scimitar through the air a few times.
Shadow magic.
I could have walked in through your door, but the window was actually easier for a man who spent time in the rigging. Shadow magic and swordplay. I've studied both. That's what will give me a crew of my own someday.
Crew? You want to be a pirate? Tyndall asked skeptically. Fool. My legacy lies both with the Stormfather and the Arcane. I aim to become a captain within the Brotherhood. With this stone, I will be. And then I will help lead my house in its revenge against the duchies. Your so-called King Rad, most of all.
The Brotherhood? Asked Estasia, confused. But Tyndall knew. They were a vague, sinister criminal organization in Alshar and southern Castal. They had even infiltrated the Alshari court, he knew from what his master had told him, and had been implicated in the murder of the Alshari Duchess. He wasn't the only one who had heard of them.
The Brotherhood of the Red,
ancient Galdan supplied, matter-of-factly. They were pirates themselves once, back during the Majocracy. Then they ruled the night on the docks in ports from Alshar to Rumir. Only the Iris is larger,
But the Brotherhood is far more sinister, by reputation. Their guile and treachery is legendary, he said warningly. Their plots and schemes as tangled as anchor chain, it is said. Cutthroats and assassins, spat Tyndall. Princes of the waves, corrected Caffin. The seaborn are the elite of the Brotherhood. Our families have guided it for centuries. We swear allegiance to whichever land-born lord we need to, but our hearts and souls belong to the Brotherhood. I aim to claim my rightful place on the council. A stone will secure that right. But you lost your chance at a stone, reminded Tyndall. You're caught. Or did you forget? Have I? Caffin laughed. I don't see a stone in your hand, Sir Tyndall. Sir, he sneered in disgust. I can't believe the likes of you acquired a witchstone when my uncle was besieged and slaughtered for the crime. You're a bastard stable boy from some godforsaken pissant mountain village who got power beyond his wits. I am the scion of a family of magi who can trace its lineage back to the third archmage. I've been trained for command and leadership my entire life. You've been trained to shovel shit and kiss some baker's ass. Baker's son, he reminded, and I've picked up a few other things along the way, Tyndall said, leaping lightly to the top of a chimney opposite Caffin, slasher in his hand, the blade his master had carried to fight Caffin's uncle. Your swordplay! It might impress a stupid cunt like Astasia, but I've been better than you since I was 10.
Hey,
the alchemist said angrily. You little... You know she's been moon-eyed over you since the day you got here, Sir Tyndall. I heard her say that she'd bed you or wed you before the next full moon. That was the term you and Lyndra agreed upon, wasn't it?
How in seven hells did you know?
She demanded.
We were alone.
Shadow magic, he reminded her. Do you know how many times you've walked right past me and not realized I was there? I've seen you and the other sluts in the South Tower naked a dozen times each. I've heard your secrets. Listen to you plot against each other, and heard the awful things you say when you think no one else is listening. It's true, Tyndall. She and those other cunts were conspiring against you the moment you arrived. It seems you're quite the catch, handsome, healthy, and the squire to a powerful mage lord. And what else did you call him, Astasia? Just stupid enough? That's not what... She fumbled, blushing in the darkness. It bloody was. You two were just as brazen as whores discussing their clients. They knew all about you fellows before you even got here. Knights magi. What an absurd term. And of course there were your witchstones. Doing curse you, Caffin? Astasia cried angrily. That's not what I meant. Oh, I'll have your head for this, she fumed. You should have heard them, Tin, he said, in a friendly tone of voice, as he shook his head sadly. It sickened me to hear them talk about you like that, like you were a pair of shoes she could purchase from the cobbler by batting her eyes and shaking her melons at you. But you were just a step up for them, he added sinisterly.
It wasn't like that, Tyndall, Astasia insisted. It wasn't. We were just joking. You have to believe me, I...
Let's finish this business between you and me, Tyndall said to Caffin evenly. Leave Astasia out of it. I'm far more concerned with the man who stole my stone than what a girl said about me. Hand over your sword and we'll go back to the guardhouse. Rondell is about to take your big lug of an accomplice into custody, and then you can start considering your legal defense. There's no way he's going to hang for your crime. He'll testify against you, he warned, as he settled his footing in. There will be no trial, idiot. I'm not surrendering my sword. Haven't you figured it out yet? I am going to get away with it. Because that big moron isn't my accomplice.
He isn't?
Tyndall asked, confused.
Then who is?
I am, Galdon said from behind him. Before Tyndall could react to that unexpected news, the head guard sprang to the spot next to Astasia and pushed the girl over the side of the roof with a firm shove. Tyndall tried in vain to reach out to catch her, magically, but without his stone, he didn't have close to the power he needed to use on such a spell. To his horror, the young woman bounced once off of the roof 5 stories below, a terrified expression on her face, and then her body tumbled to the darkened courtyard.
Sorry, lad, the ancient said unconvincingly. She was a pretty one, but too smart. You can't trust a woman who's that smart. She would have figured it out eventually. She had to go.
Galdon, Tyndall said,
his blood running cold as rage overtook him. There was no way that she could have survived that fall, not without magic. Without his stone, he'd been powerless to save her. He whirled and faced the ancient, twilight in his hand.
"You betrayed us? But you're no rat, brother. You were born south of Verone."
700 leagues south of Verone," the older man chuckled. "I've sold my sword to 100 men, but my heart belongs to the Brotherhood. I'm seaborn. I've been here, watching things for the Brotherhood. When the young master was sent here to study, I was looking after him. Then you two came here without a thought in your head, but you had those witch stones. We saw an opportunity and we took it."
"I'll kill you both," Tyndall promised, realizing he was between the two of them. He could not fight one without giving his back to the other. For all he'd heard about the Brotherhood of the Rat, that didn't sound like a target one of them would pass up. He peered into the darkness quickly, pivoting to face first one opponent, then the other. He thought he saw a way to at least change his untenable position. All he had to do was a little war magic. He called upon the augmentation that gave superior strength. Always an important thing in battle, it was nearly as useful as speeding perceptions and actions. Instead of swinging his sword, however, Tyndall focused on his legs. Without his stone, he couldn't power the spell for more than a fraction of a moment, but that was all he needed. He leaped, far greater than he could have normally, enough to allow him to reach another perch, at least 15 feet away. He came down with a rattle of slates and struggled to keep his footing, but he was out of immediate danger of being surrounded. Both of his foes looked at him in disbelief.
"War magic," he reminded them, "not as sneaky as shadow magic, but it has its uses."
"That's not going to save you," warned Galdon. "I'm no stranger to heights. Or is the young rat over there?"
"I rather enjoy them," Cavin said, making a leap almost as impressive as Tyndall's had been, without magic.
"And to answer your question earlier, yes, I have killed a man. In fact, I looked him in the eye while the rat tail in my hand stole his life away."
He produced the assassin's knife, a thin 9-inch-long tapered steel blade that was all point, no edge, in his other hand.
"It's required, a part of the initiation ritual when you join the Brotherhood. It was an amazing feeling, one I've been eager to repeat. Seeing the life in those pretty blue eyes die will be an especial treat."
"You need your elder's help to do it?" asked Tyndall disdainfully, taking Slasher in both hands.
"Oh, I'm just here to watch," Galdon assured him, lowering his sword, "and make sure things go the way they're supposed to, and testify to the headmaster afterwards about how it was the girl who was the thief and how we fought her hard, but she tragically killed you before I heroically pushed her off, and the stone was never recovered," he added mournfully.
"Then let's see how good you are, Pratt,"
Tyndall said, jumping to the end of another ridge in the complicated roof of the tower. It was 30 feet long, but only 10 inches wide at the top, narrow enough so that it would be hard for the old mercenary to join the fight. He tapped the stone in front of him with the point of his sword, invitingly.
"I thought you'd never ask,"
Caffin said, leaping to the opposite end of the beam. The two boys squared off, taking a moment to be sure of their footing and sizing up each other as opponents. Caffin slashed the air artfully a few times. Tyndall swung Slasher in slow, deliberate circles. The moon was just peeking overhead, its spare crescent bathing the duel in a soft glow. Tyndall was employing a cat's eye charm, and assumed that the rat he faced was doing likewise. That allowed the scant light to reveal all. Both boys wore good boots, and Tyndall was fairly certain he wouldn't slip on the beam. But at 8 inches wide, that didn't give him a lot of room for error. He tried to remember how Caffin had fought him before in the yard, and he remembered how clunky and clumsy he'd been. In retrospect, however, Tyndall realized that the poor showing was due to mummery, not lack of skill. Times when Tyndall had thought Caffin had just hesitated too long to strike, he realized, were instead devoted to observing how Tyndall responded. Caffin probably had a pretty good idea about how Tyndall fought, and Tyndall suddenly realized that he really didn't know how Caffin really fought at all. The rat tail in his left hand would be a problem. He'd never liked fighting two weapons with one, but the slim blade was all offense, no defense. The scimitar, on the other hand, was short and elegant,
but the steel looked sturdy enough to take a powerful blow, and the edge promised to be razor sharp.
"So ignore all of that," he told himself, "and forget you ever fought the man before."
"Begin," called Galdon helpfully, just as he had done so many times for him in the guard's practice yard. Apparently he'd done it for Caffin far more. The scion of pirate lords advanced quickly, and threw a wickedly fast combination of blows at his head, torso and legs. Slasher caught them all, and Tyndall was quick to twist away when the rat tail came sailing toward his left kidney. It forced him to spin completely, but he was still sure of his footing. He hoped he looked artful. Then he remembered there wasn't a pretty girl around to look artful for, and a cold, deadly hate fell over his heart. The next combination was even faster, and cut more at his legs than his head. A feint, Tyndall reasoned, and once again avoided the rat tail. Annoyed at being forced to play to his defense, he rushed against the boy with Slasher, weaving a series of stop cuts that changed direction twice before landing. A tricky move he'd learned at Timberwatch, but that he had never tried out in the yard. It worked, to some extent. Caffin was surprised by the charge and change in direction, and was forced back a pace. He was able to block Slasher's path until the final change of direction, which put a 3-inch shallow slice on his right thigh, above the knee.
"First blood," Tyndall called, grinning. It wasn't just bravado. He might win this battle if he could get Caffin to lose his temper and make a mistake.
"Savor it," mocked the boy,
who spun and advanced with his own furious combination of strikes, the scimitar weaving a web of moonlit steel in front of him. This time it was Tyndall who was forced to retreat. He did so rapidly, getting far out of the range of that rat tail. As the end of the beam made further retreat difficult, Tyndall risked a moment of augmentation and spun in time with Caffin's own turn to end up behind him, facing away from him but on the other side of the beam. They both spun again to face each other.
"Clever,"
Caffin admitted.
"Just lucky, remember?" mocked Tyndall. "Are you going to dance all day, or are you going to fight?"
Caffin didn't reply, a sure sign that he was losing his focus. Tyndall had sparred with a fair amount of men. When they stopped taunting, they started thinking. That was almost never a good thing for them. Tyndall started to get a little more confidence, and with the long expanse behind him to retreat to, he decided to press his advantage as much as he could. He put on his best savage grin and began a long combination of blows that increased in speed and direction until he was at the limits of his ability. Caffin did an admirable job blocking, but received two more minor cuts for his trouble. Caffin was losing focus. That much was apparent. Tyndall pressed even harder, dodging two more strikes from the rat tail until he had pressed Caffin to the limits of the beam. One more push, and he'd tumble back. That's when Tyndall's sight went murky, and Caffin suddenly was not there anymore. Tyndall whirled around, confused. Slasher protectively in front of him, and Caffin reappeared at the opposite end of the beam.
"Shadow magic," he reminded.
Tyndall noted how hard he was breathing, and the blood from the lacerations he'd inflicted. He was starting to breathe hard himself, but he'd suffered no wound yet, and he was feeling powerfully motivated. Suddenly this wasn't a sparring anymore. These men had robbed him of something precious, and killed an innocent woman out of hand. He might not understand politics or murky underground organizations, but he understood the evil in that. It was time to end this duel, and begin the battle.
"It must devour your resources," Tyndall observed.
That level of photomantics was energy-intensive. Shadow magic, from what he understood, was largely devoted to improving the efficiency of such spells, but it could only do so much.
"I have a sufficiency,"
Caffin assured. To prove the point, he flashed a flare cantrip in his hand that lit up the rooftop. Intended to blind Tyndall, he anticipated it and forestalled the worst of its effects. In any regard, he did not lose his guard, and when Caffin closed, the flare had given him little advantage. He met the barrage of attacks as skillfully as he could. Tyndall couldn't fault the boy's ferocity, or deny that there was a certain elegant dance-like grace to his style, but he wasn't taking full advantage of the blade or the two-weapon fighting style. In fact, his balance was compromised by having to deal with both weapons. That was his weakness, Tyndall realized, if he could find a way to exploit that.
Finish him, rat!
Barked the ancient below them. This isn't a dance recital.
I can understand why you'd make that mistake, Tyndall grinned at the next pause in the action. He's so dainty. It's adorable.
Shut up!
Fumed Caffin. He reversed the rat tail in his left hand and whirled into a fresh advance. It was a dramatic gesture, and would give Caffin more leverage with which to power a strike, but it also limited how he could strike. As he came out of the whirl, Tyndall decided to do something stupidly rash. He tossed his blade into the air, and engaged his strength augmentation again, plundering the last of his personal reserves to power the spell. But for that moment, he was 20 times as fast and powerful, and a moment was all it took. Instantly after he tossed Slasher flamboyantly into the air, he lowered his shoulder and bull-rushed the other boy, just as he found his footing again. With two weapons, Caffin had to fling his arms out to stop the spin to catch himself. Tyndall's charge caught Caffin with both arms spread wide, and his momentum pushed the other boy over the side of the beam. The fall was nearly 30 feet, but Caffin slowed his descent and landed without serious injury. Both of his blades clattered off into the shadows.
War magic!
Tyndall heaved as he caught Slasher. Only then did he realize what a stupid, rash, idiotic move it had been. He was glad that Master Min, or Sire Kay, weren't here to witness it. On the other hand, it had worked, and it was hard to argue with success.
Enough of this, growled Galdon, bringing his heavy cavalry sword into guard. Do you want to come down here, or shall I come up there?
He offered. Actually, I don't think you could haul your fat ass up here, old man, Tyndall spat.
Not without a strong hand. Oh, you think I can't make it up there?
Caffin, grab the box with the stone in it and be on your way. I'll handle this stable boy and we'll meet at the usual place and time.
But Aiken... Do it, rat pup!
Galdon snarled as he began to climb the roof. Tyndall spared the student a glance and saw him head toward the chimney top of the other side of the peak, a hateful look on his face.
So that's where it was. I'm growing old up here waiting, old man, taunted Tyndall. I don't even have a stone. My powers are exhausted, he embellished. It's just steel on steel, if you have the strength for it.
Oh, I suppose I'll manage, grinned the wrinkled face of the ancient. Despite his taunts, Tyndall could see little sign that age had dimmed the man's fighting skill, and he'd dueled Tyndall in sparring matches often enough so that he understood just how outclassed he was. As much as he'd boasted of skill with steel, Tyndall knew he would have to use magic to get out of this.
Just keep him busy, called Caffin as he climbed nimbly up the chimney. I want to finish him. You do as you're told, pup,
Galdon called, irritated.
You almost wrecked us. Let the real crew finish the work now. Asshole,
spat Caffin sullenly. Tyndall went into a much more conservative guard, facing the more experienced men. He couldn't count on him losing his temper. He'd have to find some advantage to take and pray to Ifnia that he was lucky. They closed on the beam, a much more even match, as Galdon gave up the flamboyance of a second weapon in favor of finishing the job with the one he was most familiar with. From the first pass of their blades, Tyndall finally understood the difference between sparring and a man trying to kill him. Galdon's sword was a war sword of many battles, heavy, thick, designed for chopping heads from the back of a horse. Each stroke he blocked or parried felt like a hammer strike on an anvil, compared to Caffin's precise blows. It wasn't particularly well suited for this venue, Tyndall thought, but then again it was hard to judge what appropriate weaponry was for a midnight rooftop duel. Slasher was lighter, thinner, and shorter by two hand spans. And it was a mage blade, Tyndall suddenly remembered. He'd been so focused on not getting killed, he'd forgotten that the tool of his adopted trade was not mere steel. It had a few tricks in it as well. He squared his shoulders, bringing his hilt low, hip high, in a two-handed grip. Not at all what a war mage about to use a spell would use. Tyndall threw a cut that, if not blocked, would have parted the ancient's nose from his face. But it was easy enough to block, and Galdon effortlessly stopped it a good 5 inches from his face, which was wearing a smug grin. Tyndall whispered the mnemonic, and Slasher threw the spell. A flare cantrip, much as Caffin's had, illuminated the rooftop for a split second, right at the point of his blade, directly in front of Galdon's unsuspecting eyes.
The ancient was blinded by the spell and threw himself backward, his sword flailing directionless in defense. Tyndall pressed his advantage, beating the heavier blade out of line again and again, and each time he nearly had the man. But Galdon was good, too good. He recovered quickly, and all too soon it was Tyndall who was on the defense again.
"Got it!"
Tyndall heard Caffin call, and then there were sounds of a scuffle. Very interesting sounds that Tyndall would have been happy to watch had he not been fighting for his life. Cursing, ancient Galdon drew a heavy dagger from his belt, but unlike Caffin, he did not use his arms to balance himself in a wide stance. He kept the dagger in front of him, his left arm shielding while that blade circled behind him like a scorpion's tail, ready to strike. He advanced, a feint, then another, with the dagger, and then that big sword was swinging for Tyndall's head. Galdon had stopped toying with him. He was making for a kill with deadly determination. Just as he had slashed at Tyndall's right arm with the dagger, successfully enough to open up a 4-inch slice in his upper arm, Slasher slipped the tiniest bit in his grip, but enough to let him know that the next strike would push right through his guard and likely take off his head. A thrill like lightning soared through him as he anticipated the blow, but it never came. Instead, Galdon's right shoulder was being jerked back, and suddenly his knife arm had swung wide to counterbalance. Tyndall didn't stop to think. He drove Slasher's point through the center of the man's unarmored chest, using every bit of strength and leverage he could marshal. He could feel the slender blade pierce through his sternum and bury itself 8 inches into his chest, right through his heart, and feel the man shudder his death throes, his sword and dagger clattering from his fingers. Tyndall nearly lost Slasher's hilt as the old ancient tumbled from the roof. Only then did Tyndall whirl around to the other side of the beam, where Caffin was fighting furiously. His scimitar recovered. Who he was fighting was the surprise. Rondal had arrived, his crappy mage blade in hand. He was barely holding on against the vicious, well-tutored student. One reason was the box he held under his left arm, which left him only one to defend against Caffin's onslaught.
"I've got the box!"
Rondal screamed. Tyndall didn't think once again. He launched himself off of the beam and collided shoulder to shoulder with Caffin, sending him sprawling. He rolled and came up on one knee, scimitar in hand, ready to strike. But he was a dozen feet away, and now he was facing 2 Knights Magi, not 1. His ally dead, his scheme revealed, his real identity unmasked. Caffin scowled, and with a wordless shout of defiance, he activated a shadow magic spell that obscured the area with a thick smoke. When the boys could see again, he was gone.
"Track him," Tyndall said breathlessly.
"I'll try,"
Rondal agreed, pushing the small stone box at Tyndall. The boy tried to open it, but it wouldn't budge. He searched for a latch.
"It's spellbound,"
Rondal said weakly, as he prepared a tracking spell.
"So how do I open it?" "It's going to be tricky,"
Rondal said.
"I think it's best if..."
Tyndall didn't wait for his fellow apprentice's advice. He hurled the box against the side of the chimney with all of his might. It smashed and shattered, the hinges wrecked by the impact. A small black silk bag was inside.
"Or, you could just do that,"
Rondal finished.
"I'm going after him,"
Tyndall said, as he felt the surge of power from his stone. It was a heady feeling, like drinking a quart of spirits all at once. He didn't enjoy it, though. He had other priorities. He wanted Caffin's head and was willing to chase him all the way back to Faris to get it. Both boys cast tracking spells, but between the two of them they had not the knowledge to counter Caffin's shadow magic. As the minutes dragged on, they became more and more convinced that the other boy was fleeing.
"He's got to be beyond the campus walls now,"
Rondal finally said.
"But which direction?"
"Trigg alone knows. Trigg and Harris,"
he said, referring to the god of thieves and travellers.
"How did you know?"
Rondal looked guilty.
"I didn't. I just knew that big idiot wasn't his accomplice. I was wrong,"
he confessed, looking at his feet.
"It was clear in the first 5 minutes that he wasn't aware of anything that Caffin was doing, apart from regular dormitory foolishness. I didn't know who the accomplice was, so I figured you'd need my help."
"Estasia?"
Tyndall began.
"She's dead,"
Rondal pronounced mournfully.
"I passed her body on the way over. It was quicker walking through the courtyard than through the towers.
Her neck was broken, he said in a whisper. She didn't survive. She...
Damn them, Tyndall said, realizing that his friend was gone.
Damn them, damn that rat to nine hells and more. You got your stone back, reminded Rondal.
So? Astasia's dead, Tyndall shouted. They killed her. That god's damned rat pushed her right off the building as easy as breaking a dove's neck.
I know, Rondal said, crouching on the rooftop.
Damn it, fumed Tyndall, his blood filled with rage.
Damn them.
She's dead, Rondal repeated.
Damn them,
Tyndall shouted, his voice filling the night.
She was so nice, Rondal said, tears in his eyes.
She was a brilliant mage, Tyndall said, and they just killed her.
I know, Rondal shouted. I had my stone and all the power in the world, but I wasn't there, and I couldn't have saved her from that. Not like that.
I'm not that good.
Damn them, Tyndall said, walking to the edge of the roof. With mage sight, the courtyard was as clear as day. He could only see her legs, but they weren't arrayed as human legs should properly work. He felt sick.
Damn them, he whispered, tears in his own eyes.
It's not your fault, Rondal said helpfully.
Oh, no, snarled Tyndall. You're the one who thought it was Stannel. You sent her up here with me and that murderer instead of coming yourself.
I know, Rondal said miserably. You were the one who put her up here.
I know, Rondal howled angrily. You think I don't know that? Tyndall stopped, realizing how unfair he was being to his fellow apprentice.
Rondal, just leave me alone, he shouted, his voice breaking harshly through the tears.
I know what I did.
He fled the roof, his mage blade falling limply from his hand as he ran. Tyndall knelt to retrieve the blade, and noted the glint of something else. He summoned a mage light and looked more carefully.
Caffin's rat tail, fallen and lost in shadow. He picked it up and turned the evil little blade over in his hands. It was long, 9 inches, a third of it hilt, in the shape of a stylized rat. The point was sharp to the touch. It would have eviscerated him had it landed.
Tyndall stared at the blade a long time before he left the roof. He was feeling a lot of things. The loss of his friend, the sting of betrayal, the guilt over rubbing Rondal's nose in their mutual error. But then they hadn't realized what they were facing. Who they were facing. Uttle Pratt's nephew, hidden in plain sight, studying to take his uncle's place and wage war on the duchies, on the kingdom. That was the only reasonable way one would take revenge.
They want a war of vengeance, Tyndall said, softly, to himself and the gods. Barduin's axe and Brigger's hearth, they will get a war of vengeance.
The night was filled with reports and briefings as they filled in the headmaster about the plot, and the staff disposed of the two dead bodies. A search was made for Caffin of Gyre at once, but the student had not returned to his room. The next morning, after a precious few hours of sleep, they told the entire tale to the headmaster and the faculty council in chambers. Tyndall thought the masters were more mortified about the theft and the death of a student than about its ramifications. To have such a crime in Inarion's sacred halls, and against such a powerful lord, they were beside themselves with apologies. Master Menelan had been more thoughtful and more appreciative of the meaning of the attack. The Brotherhood of the Rat had been an unknown factor in the New Kingdom, he told Tyndall the previous night, after he'd reported the events to him mind to mind. Now they knew where they stood, and against whom they stood. Their master had been particularly intrigued over the idea that Oral Pratt had relatives. The way he responded, however, it didn't bode well. Tyndall and Rondal were excused from examinations for the day, as the bodies of Astasia and ancient Galdan were dealt with. They ran into each other at lunch, however, both of them sitting at the same table, listlessly picking at their food. The girls' table was nearly empty, the few female students there weeping openly.
Caffin said that they were talking about marrying us, Tyndall said eventually, just to break the silence. When we got here, they were all talking about what good prospects we'd be.
I'm sure Astasia wasn't. She was, Tyndall said dully. I thought she'd be above that sort of thing, too. But she all but admitted it.
Well,
Randall said, which is what Tyndall noticed he said when he couldn't think of anything else to say.
I guess I couldn't blame her. She didn't know us yet.
I know, Tyndall dismissed. It's just interesting, I guess. I didn't think she really liked me all that much. More your type of girl.
I don't have a type of girl,
Randall said, dejected.
You will,
Tyndall nodded. And when you do, she'll be a lot like Astasia, he predicted.
You think so? Truly?
Randall asked, hopefully.
I do,
he nodded, sipping his wine. He had pulled rank on the house steward and gotten a bottle, instead of pouring the weak ale the students were usually served. The man didn't argue when he saw the look in Tyndall's eyes.
Here,
he said, dumping out the water Randall had poured and filling the cup with wine.
Let's drink to her memory, and then drink to avenging her someday.
And then? Randall asked, cautiously accepting the cup. And then we'll keep drinking until it doesn't hurt anymore, he said darkly.